Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're the place where we explore fascinating topics, dig deep, and hopefully come out with some real clarity and maybe a few surprises. And today, we're heading to the beautiful shores of Negril, Jamaica. We've got a great mix of sources lined up for this. There's a really solid encyclopedic overview giving us the background, the history, the geography, and we've also got a very current, detailed travel guide, which paints a picture of what Negril is like, you know, right now. So our mission, as always, is to cut through all that info, pull out the really important stuff, find those interesting nuggets, and basically give you a shortcut to understanding this, well, pretty iconic spot in the Caribbean. Okay, let's unpack this. So when you picture Negril, I guess most people think sprawling beach paradise, that kind of thing. And yeah, it definitely is that, but it's also described as a relatively small town, sort of spread out. It's way over on the far western tip of Jamaica, about, what, 80 kilometers, maybe 50 miles or so, southwest from Montego Bay Airport.
Right, Sangster International. Yeah, that distance itself kind of tells the story, doesn't it? About how it used to be pretty remote.
Exactly.
And the geography there is, well, it's really key to understanding Negril. It actually sits across two different parishes.
Oh, parishes. Like counties.
Yeah, exactly like counties. Most of it downtown, the West End cliffs everyone talks about, and the southern bit of the famous beach that's all in Westmoreland. That's the parish right at the westernmost point of Jamaica. But then the northern end, where some of the bigger resorts are, that actually crosses over into Hanover Parish.
Okay, so it's split. And what about that 7 mile beach? Is it really 7 miles?
The famous 7 mile beach. Well, it's less one single beach and more like two main bays joined together. You've got Bloody Bay up north, maybe around 2 miles long. That's where you find a lot of the big all-inclusive places. Then south of that is Long Bay, which is just under 5 miles. And that's got a mix, some all-inclusives, but also lots of smaller family-run hotels.
I see. So the name captures the feeling, maybe, more than the exact measurement. Some people even say it's closer to 4 miles, right?
Yeah.
From the river to Rutland Point.
Exactly. It depends how you measure. But 7 mile beach definitely stuck, and it feels vast. But then completely different from the beach, you have the West End. South of the main town area, that's all about these dramatic limestone cliffs. Totally different vibe. Great for privacy, amazing snorkeling, diving.
And the cliff jumping. I've read about that. Like 40 feet high.
Yeah, some spots are easily over 40 feet. It's pretty iconic. Rick's Cafe is famous for it.
Wow. Okay, here's something I found really interesting in the sources.
Mm.
The name Negril. It comes from Negrillo, Spanish for little black one. That's unexpected.
It is, isn't it? And the story behind it is quite fascinating. The theory goes back to 1494 when the Spanish first arrived. They apparently called the area Anguila Negra.
Anguila Negra, meaning?
Black eel. Because supposedly there was just this huge population of black eels along the coast there.
No way. Black eels?
That's the story. And Anguila Negra likely got shortened or evolved into Negrillo and then eventually just Negril.
Huh. So the name is potentially linked to eels from over 500 years ago. That's pretty wild.
It really is. Gives you a sense of the place's long history, even before tourism. Speaking of tourism, Negril's development as a resort really started picking up maybe late 1950s. But getting there back then, it was tough.
How so?
Well, often you had to take a ferry and then literally like wade through the water to get to shore.
Wow. Okay. So not exactly easy access.
Not at all. And accommodation was basic. People would rent rooms in local houses or just pitch tents in yards. Very informal. There's mention of a guy, Daniel Connell, opening a place called Palm Grove that was one of the first sort of proper guest houses for the early visitors, these flower children, as the source calls them.
Right. I remember reading about that. It had this very bohemian, laid-back vibe from the start.
Exactly. That vibe really shaped Negril's early identity. The first actual hotel, the Yacht Club, didn't come along until the mid to late 60s.
So it stayed pretty rustic for a while. Sounds like a real adventure back then. But things changed quite dramatically in the early 70s, didn't they? Something about the road from Montego Bay.
Oh, yeah. That was the big turning point. They significantly improved the road.
A proper paved road.
A two-lane paved road, yeah. Running pretty close to the beach, maybe 100 yards inland or so. That just opened everything up.
Made it so much easier to get there.
Massively. And there was this really unusual detail about that road construction.
Uh-huh.
They apparently stood lengths of old railroad track upright along the sides of the road in some sections.
Railroad tracks. Standing on end? Why?
It sounds bizarre, but the sources say it was to stop drug smugglers from trying to land small planes on the road. Like using it as a runway?
Get out. Seriously. That's incredible. A very Jamaican solution, perhaps.
Maybe so, but shows the kind of challenges they were dealing with even back then. Anyway, with that better road, development really started to take off. Then in 76, they built the Negril Aerodrome, a small airport near Rutland Point.
Okay, so even easier access again.
Right. And that led to more small hotels popping up. Initially, it was mostly North Americans escaping the winter, but then Europeans started discovering it too, and Negril's reputation just grew and grew.
Yeah, it started getting rated as one of the world's best beaches pretty consistently.
Top 10, often. And then, from the 80s onwards, it became a huge destination for American college students during spring break.
Right. That definitely added another layer to its identity. So it went from this quiet, hard-to-reach spot to a global hot spot. And the development hasn't really stopped, has it? What's happening now?
No, it definitely hasn't stopped. If anything, it's accelerated, especially along the beach. You've got major resorts now, names everyone knows, like Couples Swept Away, Couples Negril, Sandals, Beaches, the Rio Hotels.
Hedonism the Second is still there too, right? That's been around ages.
Still going strong, yes. Its adult-only niche seems enduring. Plus newer things like Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville, duty-free shopping areas, and there's massive construction happening too, like the new Royalton Negril Resort.
So big international brands moving in.
Big time. And it's not just hotels. There are also high-end residential developments now, like the Little Bay Country Club, oceanfront villas, townhouses, apparently home to quite a few wealthy Jamaican families.
Wow. That's quite a shift from pitching tents in someone's yard.
It really is. It shows how Negril has evolved from those sort of backpacker bohemian roots into a much more diverse, sometimes quite upscale, global tourism player.
That's a massive transformation. But Negril isn't just about the beach strip and the resorts, is it? There's a whole natural side inland, too, and conservation efforts.
Oh, absolutely. Away from the coast, the landscape changes quite a bit. There's the Great Morass.
The Great Morass, that's a swamp.
Yeah, a large wetland area. The Negril River runs through it. And right within the morass, there's the Royal Palm Reserve. It's a protected area focused on preserving the wetlands and the forest there.
Which seems important, given all the development pressure.
Extremely important. And conservation became a real focus, especially for the reefs. The ecosystem was suffering from all the activity. So back in 1990, the Negril Coral Reef Preservation Society was formed.
Okay.
And that led, in 1998, to the official creation of the Negril Marine Park. It covers a pretty big area, about 160 square kilometers.
And has that made a difference for the reefs?
Reports suggest it's had a really positive impact. The protected status has definitely helped the reef ecosystem, and it makes for much better scuba diving and snorkeling experiences within the park boundaries.
That's good to hear. A success story in balancing things, maybe. What about other natural adventures? Things to do beyond the beach and the reef.
Plenty. For
Yeah.
instance, Mayfield Falls is mentioned. It's known for its series of waterfalls and natural swimming pools. Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
And you can do bamboo rafting trips too, specifically on the Martha Bray River. Very tranquil, apparently, floating through all the greenery.
That sounds classic Jamaica.
It does. And then for something completely different, there's the JamWest Motorsports and Adventure Park.
Okay, what's that involve?
It's kind of an all-in-one adventure place. They have a water park, a proper racing circuit where you can drive with instructors.
Really?
Yeah, plus ATV tours, zip lining, even push cart rides, bit of an adrenaline hub.
Did I read about dolphin encounters somewhere nearby?
Yes, Dolphin Cove. It's actually near to Lucia, which isn't far. You can swim with dolphins there, interact with stingrays too.
Lots of options then. And what about that lighthouse, the one on the cliffs?
Ah, yes, the Negril Lighthouse. That's on the West End Road, which is sometimes called Lighthouse Road for that reason. It's quite historic, built back in 1894. Belgian engineered, apparently.
Wow, 1894.
Yeah, offers amazing panoramic views from the top, looking out over the cliffs and the sea. A real landmark and a connection to Negril's maritime past.
So beyond the nature and adventure, Negril obviously has this strong Jamaican culture. What comes through in the sources about the arts and music scene?
Well, you definitely see the local artistry. The sources mention handmade crafts everywhere, jewelry, paintings being sold in markets and roadside stalls. That vibrant creative spirit is very visible.
You feel that all over Jamaica, I think.
Absolutely. And music, of course, is huge. Negril hosts the Reggae Marathon every year.
Since when?
Since 2001, apparently.
Yeah.
Draws runners from all over the world, and there's a relatively new reggae and dancehall museum mentioned at a place called Island Village. Sounds like a great spot to really dive into Jamaica's musical heritage.
A museum dedicated to reggae and dancehall sounds fantastic. You know, it's interesting how Negril itself seems to have popped up in popular culture quite a bit over the years.
It really has, hasn't it? I was also surprised by some of the mentions. It's in an Ian Sighting novel, The Man with the Golden Gun from 65. Apparently, the villain planned to build a hotel there.
Ah, okay. James Bond connection.
Right. Then Bob Seger mentions it in his song Sunspot Baby in 76. And Jimmy Buffett, of course, in Jamaica Mystica from 96.
Course. And even TV shows.
Yeah, apparently an episode of Mad Men, season two, The Jet Set, back in 2008. It just shows how Negril captured the imagination, became this sort of shorthand for a certain kind of Caribbean escape.
It really did.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk food and nightlife. If you're visiting Negril, where do the sources suggest you should eat? What are the must-tries?
For that real authentic Jamaican taste, you've got places like Miss Lily's, which is at the Skylark Resort, and also Three Dives Jerk Center. Those are flagged as great spots for staples like jerk chicken, rice, and peas. You know, the classics done well.
Make me hungry. What about something a bit more upscale, maybe with a view?
Yes, for that, the guides point towards places like Rock House or Zest at the Cliff. They're known for more inventive, contemporary Caribbean food, often with those amazing cliffside views.
Nice.
And there's even an Italian place mentioned, Chow Jamaica, which sounds interesting. Italian food with Jamaican flair, stone-fired pizzas, also on the cliffs.
Italian with Jamaican flair. Okay, that sounds unique.
Doesn't it? Then, as evening rolls around, the nightlife scene kicks in. Rick's Cafe comes up again, obviously, famous for the cliff jumping by day, but it turns into a major sunset watching spot. Cocktails, music, dancing. It's kind of a Negril institution.
It seems like the place for sunset. But what if you want something maybe a bit more relaxed or different options along the beach?
Yeah, for a chiller vibe, places like LTU Pub or Wine With Me are mentioned. Good for drinks under the stars, maybe quieter conversation. And then down on 7 Mile Beach itself, things get lively again. Alfred's Ocean Palace and Margaritaville are highlighted as popular spots with crowds, often live music, that sort of party atmosphere right on the sand.
Sounds like a good mix. Something for everyone, really.
Yeah, from laid-back drinks to full-on beach parties.
So, looking ahead now, we touched on the ongoing development, the new resorts, but there's talk of even bigger changes, right? Infrastructure changes.
Yes, and this is potentially huge for Negril's future. We talked about the road improvements decades ago, but the big news, highlighted in the sources from April 2023, is the Jamaican government announcing plans to build an actual international airport in Negril.
An international airport right
Design.
there. Wow.
Exactly, along with plans for a new public beach park and a craft village.
Why the airport? What's the reasoning?
Well, the Minister of Tourism, Edmund Bartlett, is quoted saying Negril simply needs these kinds of resources to keep developing as a major destination. It suggests they see a lot more growth potential.
That raises some big questions, doesn't it? About managing that growth.
It absolutely does. It puts that balance between development and preservation into really sharp focus. An airport changes things fundamentally.
Definitely. Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive, what a journey Negril has been on. From, Anguilla Negra and those eels
Right.
to this bohemian hideaway you had to wade ashore to reach, and now evolving into this global resort destination with potentially its own international airport on the way.
Yeah.
It really does seem to blend that stunning natural beauty, the cliffs, the beach, with this persistent kind of unique spirit, plus all the adventure options.
Yeah, and if you connect it to the bigger picture, Negril feels like such a clear example, maybe a case study, of what happens when a place becomes incredibly popular. It's constantly navigating this tension between growing, modernizing, bringing in more tourism, and trying desperately to hold on to the natural beauty and the authentic character that made people fall in love with it in the first place.
That's perfectly put. It's a real balancing act. So for you listening, what were the aha moments here? Was the eel story
Ha, maybe.
or the railroad tracks used as barriers or just understanding that the 7 Mile Beach is actually these two distinct bays?
Lots of little surprises.
Definitely. And maybe the final thought to leave you with is this. As places like Negril inevitably continue to grow and attract more people, how do they manage it? How can they build the infrastructure like that potential airport and handle more visitors without sacrificing the very soul, the natural magic that drew everyone there initially?
Finding that balance, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? How do you achieve progress without losing what's precious?
Something to think about.